What is it like to be exceptional? What does it take to get there? Why do some people achieve greatness when others can't, no matter how hard they try? And what are the secrets of long life and happiness? These questions are put forward and answered, actually, by New Scientist managing editor Rowan Hooper, who's written a new book called Superhuman. I'm delighted that Rowan joins us now. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Bill.
Nice to talk to you. This is a very interesting subject, this. It's basically, are champions born or made? That's the question. Nature or nurture, I guess.
It is. And let me say right away that it's never nature or nurture. It's always both things.
Yeah.
So it's always this sort of idea that it's one or the other, but it's always both.
Yes. And to do the book, you interviewed people who you describe as having either extreme mental or physical ability. Some really interesting people you went to.
Yeah. I wanted to look at people who are the best at what humans can do for a whole range of different traits, from intelligence, but to longevity, to singing ability, even bravery and happiness and things like that. So I really cast the net wide and found people who were the very best at those things.
And did you find commonality between their particular skills in terms of how they manifest themselves as superhuman?
Yeah, I did actually. I didn't really expect it, but quite often I found that there was a fearsome drive and a passion within the people, which kind of makes sense if you think about it, because if you want to be the best at something, you've got to dedicate yourself. But all the people had a real positivity and a drive and a commitment, even for the things that weren't necessarily things you have to train for, like running ability or singing. But for things like lifespan and happiness, people, everyone seemed to have a very positive streak to their nature.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because, of course, all the time, people who are good at something, and I've noticed a lot, I've been in the music business for a long time, and that particularly because of the kind of X Factor generation, you get a lot of this, well, I'm as good as they are, I could do that. And, of course, that's an easy thing to say, but not necessarily achieve. And I remember a quote from Garry Kasparov, the chess champion, who was a bit fed up that people were saying anybody could work as hard as he had to become the chess champion. He said the ability to work hard for days on end is the talent.
Yeah, he did. And actually, one of the really interesting things I found out during the book was that that ability to train and put yourself through that sort of dedication, that itself is a genetic trait.
So
they found that by doing twin studies and found that the amount of time people practice at something is itself quite strongly genetic, which is really fascinating.
A lot of the people you talked to kind of knew all along that they were destined for greatness. And one in particular is Ellen MacArthur, who back in 2004-2005 went around the world on her own in 71 days. And when she was four, she decided she wanted to do that.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. She'd gone on a boat. Her auntie had a little boat and she was taken out on it when she was four. And she came home and told her mum and dad, I am going to sail around the world.
Wow.
And they sort of patted her on the head and said, yeah, okay. And, you know, most other four-year-olds would go off and do something else. But she dedicated her whole life then to doing it. And she did it, which is absolutely amazing. And she denies completely that she's an exceptional person. But it's a pretty amazing thing to do that.
Serena and Venus Williams, they're an interesting couple. They had the kind of devotion of their father to push them to become tennis champions. Only this morning, Rowan, Joe Jackson, who is Michael and all the rest of the Jackson family's father, died. Now, he's an interesting one, isn't he? Because he had the reputation for being pretty ferocious and even abusive to his children. But, of course, the question would then be, had he not been, would they have done what they did?
As I say, you have to practice a lot. I think, so for one of the people I interviewed in the book, she's an opera star, Barbara Hannigan.
Yeah.
She just won a Grammy this year. She's one of the greatest singers around at the moment in the classical world.
Yes.
She practiced very hard her entire life, but she came from a very loving family. Her mum really nurtured and brought out that trait in her, didn't abuse her in any way.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't need that sort of harshness. I think that the Jacksons, I think they, you know, it's clear they have there's an immense genetic amount of talent in Michael Jackson especially.
Yeah.
And I think it probably would have come out if his father hadn't been quite so harsh.
You talk about practice there, and practice is a very interesting thing. Again, in the world of music, which I'm familiar with, you know, I've been a guitar player all my life, and I've been a vocalist all my life, and I've taught people to do both of those things. And they're very definitely, no matter how much you practice, if you don't have the innate ability, you do hit a ceiling.
Yes, yes. I mean, I think people like yourself who teach something like singing or music, and the teachers I spoke to, they're aware of that, or of what you've just said, that you need some foundation to build upon. But the weird thing is, in many books, the bestsellers seem to say that anyone can do it.
Yeah.
And we'd love that to be true. I think that's why those books are popular, because we all would love that we could be the best. But it's just not the case. You have to have something to build on.
The example I always use when people say, oh, that's, you know, how difficult can it be to write a hit song? Well, the answer is very. It requires not only luck, but requires quite a large amount of skill. And the example I always give is, well, look, you know, I can drive a car, I think, quite competently. I've been doing it since I was, you know, 18 years old. But yeah, it doesn't make me Lewis Hamilton, no matter how good I think I am.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, I've got a chapter on focus in the book, and I interviewed a Formula One driver, Lance Stroll. And, you know, he, like you say, anyone can drive a car, but to drive at 200 miles an hour for 2 hours, that pressure. I spoke to some psychologists, and they said that you look at F1 drivers, and the stress that comes in through their body and through their mind when they're driving at that speed, their bodies interpret that stress as pleasure, whereas the rest of us would buckle under it and probably crash the car. Well, definitely crash the car.
Yeah.
But people at that level, you know, people at that level, they love it. They actually love what they're doing. They don't feel stressful by it.
Yeah, absolutely. You talk in the book about somebody who, your kind of chosen example of somebody with extreme intelligence is Dr. John Nunn. He's an extraordinary chap in that he arrived at Oxford to read maths at the age of 15.
Yeah, he was the youngest undergraduate at Oxford for 500 years. And, his mathematical ability came out incredibly early. He understood numbers before he could read. So that's a very good example of a kind of innate talent that was there. Before he could read, he could understand math.
So basically, he'd be looking at the books in his bookcase in his parents' home, and they'd say, what are you doing? You can't read the books. And he'd worked out how the numbering worked at the bottom of the pages, even though he couldn't read.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. I mean, that's incredible. Like, how could he grasp numbers? I think that really is something almost magical about that.
Yes.
It's serious.
So in that case, you would ascribe that purely to genetics.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, or very strongly. I mean, again, he had to work, but for people of extreme intelligence, there is a large dollop of genetics behind it. Yeah,
yeah. Now, a very different kind of superhuman, and who you would describe as the real superhuman in the book is nobody famous. It's somebody probably you've never even heard of, Kate Allott.
Yeah. Well, so when I did the chapter on resilience and happiness, I was thinking, how do I do this? I mean, how do you find someone who's superhumanly resilient or happy?
Yeah.
And someone, a neuroscientist, actually told me about Kate. She'd had a brainstem stroke when I think she was 39, and in her case, she became locked in, which is when you're completely paralysed, you can't talk or move. But you're completely fine on the inside. And it is quite commonly happens that you get written off by doctors.
Yes.
They think, oh, that's a lost case, you know, that they're a vegetable. And the person inside is kind of screaming, no, no.
Yeah.
Communicate. You know, she was told she'd been in hospital bed her entire life, the rest of her life. But through an incredible power of will, she started desperately trying to move again, and over weeks and months she just started moving, like first her finger and then her toes, and then finally she managed to walk out of hospital, and now she's pretty much completely recovered. So that's absolutely exceptional turnaround. Yeah, the neuroscientist said that she did make a superhuman effort.
Wow. And where does that come from? And that's we're never going to know that, are we?
Well, she said to me, you know, I've got kids at home. I'm getting out of this damn bed and I'm going to go and see my kids. And that power, that drive and that desire and love, that's what fed her will to get out of bed and to overcome this disaster that had befallen her.
And you spoke to a neurologist at UCL there who says that the brain, even though it's damaged, can kind of reorder itself as long as you put in the effort.
Yeah, yeah. So we know that, and it happens quite commonly when you're young. If you have some injury or a brain injury, the brain is incredibly adaptable, and it can rewire itself and get over quite bad things. But that ability decreases as we get older. So even by the time I'm 39, it's quite difficult to rewire the brain and to get it to change its ways. So it did take incredible effort on Kate's part to get over that.
And so there's a kind of urban myth, isn't there? If you practice anything for long enough, then you'll get great at it. And I think the kind of number is around 10,000, isn't it? 10,000 hours of practice.
Right.
I guess at the end of the day, what we're saying is, yes, you'll get good, but to be exceptional is a little more tricky.
I think, you know, the Beatles are often cited as examples of the 10,000 hours, because it's said that when they were in their Hamburg days, they played together so much, they racked up 10,000 hours and became the greatest group in the world.
Mm.
But as Paul McCartney himself has said, well, lots of other bands played that hard, and there's only one band that's the Beatles. I just think it's incredible it kind of undervalues massively like the ability of Lennon and McCartney to say, oh, it's just because they practiced together a lot in Hamburg that they became, you know, the greatest songwriting partnership that we know, you know?
Yeah, absolutely right. Well, fascinating stuff, Rowan. Thank you so much for joining us. The book is called Superhuman. You can get it now on our website, tre.radio. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Bill. Cheers.
Take care. Bye-bye.